Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased today to be broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin. This is the sixth annual kickoff for what's called Bayfield in Bloom, and it's a month or more of wonderful activities that are going on throughout the Bayfield area, and really pleased to be here today and have a really handsome audience. I mean, a bunch of good-looking people out there. Thank you all for coming. Really appreciate it very much. It's nice to have a great crowd, and it's nice to have you listening in. And again, I hope you'll join us as we talk with our three guests today about all things gardening. Art Odie is chair of the Bayfield in Bloom event. He's a horticulture landscaper, a judge for America in Bloom. He's an expert in botanical gardens and arboretum, flora and fauna. Really, Art, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Very glad to be here, Larry.
Jason Fishbach is the Ashland-Bayfield County UW Extension Agricultural Agent and knows a lot about horticulture. Jason, thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me.
And back once again, Don Kissinger, the West Central Regional Urban Forestry Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. So got some tree questions. He's a good guy to talk to as well. And welcome back. Thanks very much, Don, for being with us.
Thank you as well.
Tell you what, if you'd like to join in, the number to call with your questions, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. This is a beautiful building that we're in. We've been in this building every year, and some wonderful exhibits all the way around the outside. You know, if you were here, you could buy some nice native plants. You could buy some wonderful food. You could buy some books. I tell you what, there are lots of great exhibits here, and I'm really pleased to see all the exhibitors who took the time, some great educational information here, I've had a good time walking around and looking at everything, and I'm going to try and name a lot of those folks as we go along here today who have taken of their time to be with us. But I want to talk a little bit about Bayfield in Bloom just to start with. Art, you're the chair. You know, there's lots going on.
Well, we have a great daffodil display this year.
You know, we drove into town last night, and I was just – My jaw dropped, and Jim Packard was sitting next to me in the car. Our jaws just dropped to see the beautiful daffodils that you have. How many thousands are there out there?
I think in the last 3 years we've probably planted about 30,000, but I wouldn't say there's 30,000 out there because we've made a few mistakes along the way, but we're learning. We're learning real quick.
Oh, man. Well, that's a great way to start it off, to drive into town and have that kind of welcome.
And they are blooming for Bayfield in Bloom. We must have some sort of special connection because they're blooming now, and usually they would bloom about a week before this and maybe be over by now.
Well, it's beautiful, and lots of events going on through the course of the next month or so. And I know you've got I believe you have a website too that covers some of this.
Yeah, just go to the chamber website, Bayfield Chamber of Commerce website, and tell you all about it. We have our apple blossom run tomorrow, and I don't think the apple blossoms will be running.
We'll call it the daffodil run. The daffodil
That's
run.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. And then we have both country and city garden tours. The country garden tour is next weekend, and I go to the website and find out exactly when all the activities are. But then we also have our great lupin display, which is a wildflower display, which we have no control over and take no credit for. But that usually comes up about the second week in June, and that's a great time to be here too.
Yeah, it's a wonderful time to be here. Any time's a wonderful time to be here, as a matter of fact. Well, Jason Fishbach, what's going on here weather-wise and so forth, this part of the state in terms of our growing? I know the daffodils are up, that's for sure. What else is going on?
Well, it sounds like everywhere in the state, we're real behind, at least compared to the last 3 or 4 years. The blossoms aren't out. In fact, the leaves are just starting to come out. Other than that, we're finally starting to warm up the last couple of days, so everything's just kind of slow, but that's okay.
And Don Kissinger, I was looking before our program began at the straight line winds that came through a couple of years back and dropped a bunch of trees, and you wouldn't know it now to look around. Things have been replanted, and things are looking pretty good.
Yeah, actually, Bayfield received a urban forestry grant, so that helped them doing a bunch of recuperating of their trees and removal. And this year, they've planted a bunch of trees too. In fact, this morning we had a Arbor Day celebration with fourth grade students down by the lakefront and planted a few trees down there.
Well, that's wonderful. I tell you what, lots of people want to visit with you. I know we probably have some audience members with some questions, but let's go to the phones. Dan in White Lake has been waiting a while here, so let's go to Dan. Dan, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I went crazy last year and bought a whole mess of dahlias, and I got about 8 dozen. I dug them up, dug up the bulbs last year well before any frost set in, dried them in the basement, packed them in peat moss, and put them away. But now I've been told, much to my chagrin, that I should have potted these things up and put them in my greenhouse a month or two ago. But I don't have any greenhouse. What's the downside risk of just planting them back out in the garden, and do I have to wait for the soil temperature to get up to something special?
I'd say, and you're in White Lake. With Art Odie, you want to take a crack?
Oh, I think that's one for Jason.
Jason? There's all this pointing back and forth, you know. When you have three guests, you never know who's going to answer. Jason, what about it?
Dan, do you want to put those outside, or do you want in the garden or in pots?
In the garden. I'm trying to avoid the pot deal if I can.
Yeah. Well, what I'd recommend is, you're right, you want to worry a little bit about soil temperature. If you've got a raised bed, perhaps, or a little lighter soil, sandy soil, that might warm up faster, you go ahead and, you know, give it a shot and plant it. The other option is, if you are worried about it, is just, you know, bite the bullet this year and put them in pots.
You only have 96. What the heck?
Yeah. Send me your spare pots. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Well, let's go to Wayne in Green Bay next. Hi, Wayne. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning, Larry, and your distinguished guests and your audience there. My question is, talking about blooms or lack of, I have two apricot trees. They're called Moon Glow and Sun Glow, and they're in their 3 years now. About inch to 2 inch trunk is, 7 feet tall, and lack of blooms this year. I had three on one and a dozen on the other, and that's it. The foliage came out real good. The green, the leaves is looking really good. What could be going on there?
I'm going to go back to Jason for that one too. Jason?
Yeah, in the Green Bay area, to some degree, you are pushing your luck with apricots. They will survive, but you'll have cold damage during the winter. And what might be happening is the flower buds and those overwintering buds are dying because of cold temperatures, especially this last winter, which was a little bit colder than the last few. And that's most likely what's happening, because remember, those flower buds are setting last summer, and they've got to overwinter and then come out this spring. So that's my guess is what's happening.
I might add to that, too. Be sure with any flowering tree or fruit-producing tree that you don't over-fertilize, because you may get all vegetative growth. So,
yeah, that's another good point to keep in mind. Thanks a lot for calling, Wayne. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We've got some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Claire in Burns is up next. Claire, hello to you.
Yes, hi. Good show. This is about a question about trees also.
Okay.
And I just went into, I'll just say a Minneapolis area, well-known, prosperous place to get fertilizer sticks for trees.
Okay.
And this clerk said, oh, I can tell you what you need. She said, you just need to go to a break and entire shop and get some iron filings and put those iron filings under the trees, and they'll grow twice as fast.
Well, Don Kissinger, do you put iron filings under your trees? Or
no, I haven't, but I have heard of that being done also. I guess what I would recommend is those spikes that you were thinking of getting or did get, they do very little, to be honest, as far as the health of the tree. I do not recommend using those growth spikes or fertilizer spikes at all. Basically, once mulching the tree, using some malorganite potentially, but really you shouldn't use a whole lot. You shouldn't really need that.
Just to add, if If the tree actually needs iron, it's going to tell you. It's going to be somewhat yellow, the leaves, chlorotic with kind of dark green leaf veins. So unless the thing is obviously iron deficient, you really shouldn't need to add any additional iron.
But it doesn't hurt it?
Probably not.
I wouldn't say that it would hurt it.
Art, you were going to make comment.
I think you'd have to have a very acidic soil in order to free up the iron so it'd be available to the tree using iron filings. If you have a real heavy clay soil, you may have iron deficiency, and then you're going to want to use a chelated iron that will be available, because otherwise iron just is going to not be available to the tree.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we take another call here. Chris in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really like your show.
My question,
last week, I believe, one of your guests mentioned a new maple hybrid called Sierra Glen. I've been trying to find that on the Internet with no luck. Am I spelling it wrong, or is it not available yet?
No, Sierra Glen is out there, and you said you're in the Green Bay area?
Yes.
Yes.
I would try Meacham's Nursery would probably have it. Also, out of Manitowoc, you might want to try Silver Creek Nursery, but it is around the state because I've had it planted, I've seen it planted, and it is a good cultivar. I would recommend that.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And John and Gaze Mills, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
How you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I've got some basic tomato questions. Okay. I'm going to grow 160 tomatoes in an old quail pheasant pen. It hasn't been used in 3 years, but for 3 years before that, it was a quail pen, and for 10 years before that, it was a pheasant pen. I'm going to do about 100 of them in cages, and there are about 60 of them in a straight-line trellis. Am I going to experience a problem because of all of the animal waste?
Probably going to get some pretty rapid growth. I don't know. What about it, Jason Fishbach?
Well, I think there's you definitely have plenty of nitrogen available, and you're going to see some pretty vigorous growth, which is great. The problem is you might not have a lot of tomatoes. The advantage you have is you're in Gaze Mills, so you've got a fairly long growing season. You've got some time to ripen some fruit once you do get it. What you're going to make sure you want to do is do a lot of aggressive pruning. You may want to consider a determinant type tomato, or if you do an indeterminate, make sure you're cutting the top off at some point, because you really want to try to get some tomatoes and not just a lot of green, pretty tomato plants.
So good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, I tell you what, we've got three great guests for you here today. Art Odey Jr. is the chair of the Bayfield in Bloom event. Horticulture expert Jason Fishbach, Ashland Bayfield County UW Extension Ag Agent, and Don Kissinger, who is West Central Regional Urban Forestry Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, in 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of people to thank today for this event that we're having at the Bayfield Pavilion, Bayfield, Wisconsin, as we celebrate Bayfield in Bloom. Paul Guello, our engineer out of Superior, and his son Jake and daughter Katie have both are helping out today. Rudy Listing from our Brule area, our engineer there. John Munson, our regional manager. And Steve Williams back in Madison. This is a special thank you to Steve. It's his last day, and he's going on to other things. And I want to wish him well and thank him very much for his help for the program today. But and I'll be thanking some other people as we move along here, too. But I want to get back to the phones. And also, I'll just invite those of you in the audience, if you have a question. Jim Packard is roaming around here with a microphone, and oh, there he is! I see that microphone up in the back of the room. Raise your hand, and he'll come around, and you can ask your question. But let's go to Jenny in Tomahawk next, who has a question for us. Jenny, hi! Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Sure.
My question is not about trees, but it is a plant. I want to know if plants that are weak, I have a petunia that is absolutely gorgeous. Someone gave me as a gift, but it keeps breaking and breaking and breaking. And I wonder if the plant needs calcium.
Huh. Not so sure to be I don't know. Art, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, plants don't have bones, so I guess we're not looking at osteoporosis. When you say it's breaking, do you mean that it's physically breaking parts of the plant off?
Or? You know, every time somebody picks it up, a stem will break.
It's probably growing a little too lushly, and it maybe should be put in. Is it in a sunny location? It's in the house.
Yes, it is in the daytime. At night, we've been bringing it in, but in the daytime, it gets sun most of the day.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's been growing too fast, and if you're real careful with it, so that it doesn't. Become physically damaged, and if you keep it in the sun and if you don't over-fertilize it and over-water it, it probably will toughen up. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Okay, I just put fertilizer sticks in. You think I should take them out?
Well, that's hard to say.
I just put them in yesterday.
I don't know. Jason, what do you think?
Have you been fertilizing it at other times?
No, it was a gift for Mother's Day, so it's new.
Okay. Yeah, it may just be that, you know, if it came out of the greenhouse, it's been well fertilized and is doing really well. If it looks healthy, if that's the problem, it's hard to say without seeing the plant. You might want to pull those sticks out just to hopefully harden that up and not make it so lush.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Jenny. And Lisa in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I had a question. I have a blackberry bush that my neighbor had in her yard, and it seems to be coming over to my side of the fence now. But the berries are really bitter. Any idea on sweetening them up other than using a lot of sugar?
Bitter blackberries.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Jason, you want to try that?
Are you talking with your neighbor still?
yes, I am.
You
She's
can
a
find
sweetheart.
Out what kind of cultivar it is. If it's a wild, you know, bramble blackberry, those aren't selected for their flavor. They're just growing wild, and that might be why it's particularly bitter. If it is a cultivar, you know, then blackberries tend to be somewhat tart or bitter. And yeah, sugar is, you know, your answer.
I believe that it is wild. She's got a beautiful yard back there, and she's actually handpicked what she wants back there. She's got three plum trees in her front yard, a pear tree in her back, and I believe that it was something that she decided to put there.
Wait, what are you talking about?
A word.
Got a youngster there.
Yeah, my daughter.
A word of caution. You're sure it's a blackberry and not something else? I mean, you're positive it's a blackberry. You'd hate to... I'm just thinking, you said it's very bitter. I would hope you're...
Yes,
not picking and eating nightshade or anything.
Oh,
I want to check that out.
I know that it's what she has growing over there. The other
I'd
question I had is
her.
Is there any way of preventing it from spreading too far into my garden? Because it started with one shoot, and now I've got four.
Well, what do you think? It spreads, I suppose you could put down some sort of barrier of... a lot of work.
The main thing is to keep at it. If it's just starting to get in, just you're going to have to keep at it. If you start getting a few plants established, you know, the more and more it's harder because those things really spread fast. But I do agree with Art. I think you should go talk to your neighbor, find out exactly what it is, and that'll help you give some guidance on how to control it or how to maintain it.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Lisa, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jeff in Brookfield, on to you. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I love
morning.
You guys' show. I've got
Thank
a question
you.
for your guests. I have a maple tree that every, you know, spring and fall I get the helicopters, and I have in my tree line a lot of shoots ranging from probably 1 to 2 or 3 years old, And I'm wondering what the best way to transplant these to different areas in the yard would be. What's the best way to do that without, you know, and saving these things?
Okay, let's see. Art, you want to take crack?
Well, the first thing, I'm going to sound like Mr. Caution here, but the first thing I would be sure is what kind of maple is it? Because if it's a Norway maple, which seeds very heavily, you really don't want to have a lot of Norway maples in your yard or anybody else's yard. One is enough because they're invasive. And if you're getting a lot of seeding, you may have a Norway maple there, and I would be careful what you're transplanting. Otherwise, it's just a matter of when the seedlings are dormant, just carefully take them out of the ground with a trowel and either line them out in a little nursery situation or pot them up individually and grow them on for a couple of years and then plant them where you want to plant them. But be sure it's not a Norway maple because you don't want those all over your yard.
Yeah, Don, anything to add to that?
Nope, I think Art has covered the topic well.
Okay.
Does the Norway maple have a real wide, broad maple leaf? I mean, our navel has one that's like silver on the bottom, and it's a real narrow leaf. This is a real wide maple leaf. I mean, it's not
The best way to tell a Norway maple would be when the leaf is fully grown, break the leaf off of the stem, and if it's a Norway maple, and you may have to do this on a couple of leaves, if it's a Norway maple, it will have a little bit of latex sap at the base of the petiole where it's attached to the branch, and that's an easy way to tell.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff, for calling. Appreciate it. And Lisa Inshano, on to you. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question.
Sure.
I have a nice maple tree in my front yard. And fall a couple of years ago, I noticed that the leaves of it were mottled rather than having symmetrical colors. And last spring, there was bare, sparse leafing on the plant, and though it set seed. And by fall, I noticed spots like fungus on the branches, and the leaves were again mottled. And many didn't drop until this spring. And this spring, I don't notice any seed spots, but there seems to be more mottling. And I hope this is something that's curable because I really like the tree.
How long have you had the tree? Is it a tree that you planted there?
No, it was there when I moved in. And it's probably 30 to 40 years old, so it's a pretty big tree.
And do you know what type of maple it is?
I think it's a sugar maple.
Okay. And are you noticing that this mottling is occurring throughout the entire crown or just in the upper portion or lower portion or...
Throughout all the tree. You mean the fungus or the mottling of the leaves?
The mottling of the leaves.
Well, that only shows up in the fall when the leaves are changing the colors. Otherwise, it's, plain green.
Okay. And when in the fall is that occurring then?
Just when the leaves start turning.
Okay. But is that earlier than other maples that you are seeing around there?
Yeah, actually, it starts turning a little bit earlier than the other maples.
Have you had any of those limbs where the mottled leaves have been that are dead now?
Yes, there's some of them are starting to die.
Okay.
I think we're looking at not the best situation here.
I think it could be a disease,
sounds like
a
maple,
pathogen type problem.
Sounds like maple decline.
Another thing I would ask is, have you done any grading of your lawn or construction around the tree?
No, I haven't.
Then it probably is a pathogen.
One of the things you might want to do, since you've got it's a beautiful tree, you might want to get a certified arborist out there to take a look at it. That would be one recommendation. What do you think, Don?
Another thing you could do is talk to your extension folks and. There's a diagnostic lab that you could send samples to in Madison. I don't have the address right here, but if you talk to your extension agent, you could send down samples to them, along with a twig sample, probably the size of your pinky, maybe 4 inches in length, a couple of those, and send those down there. The cost is probably $15, $20, and they can take a look at it. There is a disease that's called verticillium wilt, which it could be, or a number of other things also.
Yeah. That's an excellent idea. So contact your county UW Extension office. And I can't remember the address for the plant diagnostic lab in Madison, but it's not coming into my head right now. But the county agents certainly will know. Well, at least they'll have it in their office and they can look it up. They're sort of like me. You got to have all those addresses in your head. So give that a try, Lisa, and I'd probably do it sooner than later.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I had another quick question. I wanted to, because it was such a nice tree, in case it did die, I let it sort of seed last year, and so I have a lot of little seedlings coming up. Are those in danger of getting this same thing?
If it's verticillium and you keep those seedlings and plant them in a different area, that should not be a huge problem, I would not think.
How far away?
But I would not plant it in that same area where you, if you do lose this tree, I wouldn't plant it in the same area.
How far away would you think? Because I have a very small yard.
Okay. If it's in your front yard, I'd plant it in your backyard.
Yeah.
Basically, twice the size of the drip line, which is basically the perimeter of the limbs,
okay.
I would think if you can keep it that far away, that would be good.
Yeah.
Okay. And
thanks, Lisa.
One more real quick question. I also seem to have gotten some volunteer maples, and one of them is purple. Does that mean... You know, it's a small seedling now. Does that mean when it grows up, it will have purple leaves?
That's probably a Crimson King seedling, or there's a Crimson King. There's a couple other cultivars of Norway maple that are old, like beginning of the last century. I'm dating myself, 20th century tree cultivars that there are a lot of. Around, and they many of them do breed true to color, and if it's a Schwedler maple seedling, it'll have that burgundy color early in the year, and then it will turn green. If it's a Crimson King or some other cultivar that does breed true, it will have the purple leaves all year long. But you don't want too many of them because they're a Norway cultivar, and they can be invasive.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from Christine who writes to ask where she can find a good source of native species seeds to replant an area that was flooded. And probably if she was here at the Bayfield Pavilion with us right now, she could, there's a few, Wildflower Woods, Silver Springs Farms, probably some other places that might be able to supply those. I'm not sure, but what do you think, guys?
Well, how big is this area?
Well, that's a good question. That's something that we didn't get on the email.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's email. I'm sorry. Well, if it's a small area, I would say that what I would do is I'd find a wetland where I could get permission to collect seeds throughout the summer, and I'd collect seeds in the summer and fall and reseed that area myself. If it's a large area or you don't have the time and opportunity to do that, just get on the internet and type in something like Wisconsin native plant sources or whatever, and you'll get all sorts of things that'll pop up.
Many around the state.
Yeah.
One place you could go, there's out of the Sigurd Olsen Environmental Institute at Northland College in Ashland, they have a Northern Native Plant Project, and they have a nice website that includes, I believe, links to a lot of the sources for native seeds. An important thing to keep in mind when you do buy those native seeds is you want to get them sourced as close to you as possible, you know, instead of buying native seed from Arkansas or Wisconsin. So just make sure you ask when you're going to those sources where they're getting their seed and try to get it as close to home as possible.
All right. And Jim in Green Bay is up next with a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I have two questions about asparagus that I planted 3 years ago, the Jersey Giants. And I'm telling you, I love these things. Holy moly. I might have to go out with a saw and cut them down. But are you supposed to snap asparagus off or you dig it below the ground level to take them off? That's number one. And how do they multiply? Do they spread? These are male.
All right. Jason, we'll go to you.
Yeah, they don't really spread like a classic rhizome, but their crown will get bigger and bigger over the years if they're actively growing. Usually what I think is snapping works fine, or you can just snip them off with a pruning shears or something, you know, maybe a half an inch to an inch above the ground layer. And remember, you want to leave plenty of spears to let that plant re-energize itself, so to speak. So let those things go to flower and keep growing during the summer. So don't cut them all.
Don't cut them all. We had some great asparagus last night at Maggie's restaurant in Bayfield. Oh, wonderful asparagus. Thanks for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And if anybody in the audience has a question, please feel free to chime in. Jason, I wonder about the project that you have going here. It's called the Eco Apple Project. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, this is a statewide project in Wisconsin where UW Extension and some private consultants are working with groups of fruit growers, primarily apple growers, but it's expanding to other fruits as well, where we provide assistance and education to and the farmers themselves work together to integrate or implement practices that are using less toxic sprays or fewer sprays to grow their fruit. We do have a challenging environment here to grow fruit because there's so many pests that like to eat them. You name it, there are a lot of pests, as well, I'm sure most homeowners
sure.
know, versus other climates. And so it's a challenge to grow them, whether using organically approved sprays or conventional sprays. It's a challenge, and these days the sprays are becoming more and more targeted to specific insects, requiring a lot more knowledge. And so this project has been going for about 3 years, and we're making a lot of good progress. And I think the growers, especially in the Bayfield area, are really appreciative of what they're learning and how it's helping them grow fruit that is much safer and easier to grow.
Sounds like a wonderful project and a lot of people involved in it.
Yeah, there's, I believe, 6 networks in the state right now. We're up here in the Lake Superior network, and we hope to expand that as we start to include strawberry and raspberry growers as well.
Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Lots of callers online here, but we've got a caller who called in and said Agricol is a place for native plants, and you guys know about Agricol. I think Jason, you were shaking your head yes.
Yeah, I believe Agricol is out of the Baraboo area. They do carry quite a lot of seed, and you can get large volumes. I'm not sure their sourcing for, and I'm sure it varies for the given species, but just check with them. I think they've got a nice website that they've put together. So yeah, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to Dorothy in St. Germain next. Dorothy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have 2 questions. One is on foxglove. Last year, I had foxglove that bloomed beautifully. At the end of the season, I collected the seeds, cooled them down, and then planted them in a seed bed. And they grew beautifully. This spring, there are all kinds of foxgloves, which I'm in the process of transplanting from the seed bed into regular bed growing area. And I'm wondering if they're going to bloom this year or if I'm going to have to wait till next year.
What do my esteemed guests think about that? Art, what do you think?
Just my gut feeling is next year.
Next year, huh?
That was kind of running through my head, too.
Okay.
Might get lucky, but...
Yeah, that's not what I wanted to hear, but that's fine. The other question I have is on asparagus, and I planted some asparagus here in St. Germain, and, of course, the soil is not good, but I did dig down 3 feet and 4 feet type thing, enriched the soil, planted them, and they had done marginally up until this year, and this year they haven't come up at all. And I'm wondering if I'm a little too early or if it's just that they would have anyhow, died between last year and this year.
St. Germain, it's a little further north.
My guess is they probably just haven't come up yet.
Yeah.
I know the asparagus in my place has not shown up yet, so that could be it. If you had plenty of, winter mulch and plenty of snow like
yeah.
we did this
yeah.
winter, they should have overwintered just fine. So
well, that's what
you
I
could
thought.
Pull away some of the old mulch and let that crown warm up a bit, but I think they should still show up this spring.
All right. Thanks very much, Dorothy, for calling. And let's go to Mark in Hudson. Hi, Mark.
Hello. This is Mark Dolan speaking. I have a question on a Stanley plum prune and a Stella cherry. I have a lot of winter kill damage on the tree. Approximately one-third to one-half the tree is died. When do you cut the whole tree down, and when do you just prune?
Ooh, Art?
Well, I'm not really a fruit expert, but I would not do anything until you really are sure what portion of that tree has actually died, because we had a long winter and it's still early, and I would only cut back what is obviously dead, you know, like a month from now. I wouldn't touch it at this point in time.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Thanks, Mark. Good luck. Gail in Rice Lake, on to you. Gail, are you there?
I have a question about the man who asked about the dahlias. Whether he could plant them or not. And I live way north, and I just wait a while, wait a few weeks, maybe till Memorial Day weekend, and then just stick them right in the ground, and they'll be okay.
Sounds good to me. I'm sure he likes that idea, too.
Yeah, save him getting all those pots. So,
thanks,
anyway,
Gail.
That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Laura in Jackson, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I love your show, and I listen to it every week. My problem is we tore down an old shed in our backyard about 2 years ago, and there was all this creeping charlie that had grown around the perimeter of it, and now it's just spread completely into my grass. I hardly have any grass there anymore, and I'm wondering what the best way to get rid of that.
Sounds like my lawn. It sounds just like my lawn. Well, creeping charlie, are you seeing a lot of blue flowers now?
Yes. I mean, I do own a sod cutter. I could cut it completely out and reseed it all, but I was hoping maybe there was another way I could go about it.
Well, there are some chemical ways, and I think this is actually, if you want to use chemicals, I think this would be the time to do it. Jason, what do you think?
Well, I'm just trying to remember exactly what those chemicals are and how best to use them. You know, there are a whole range of treatments, and I'll tell you, there's probably 12 million web pages on how to kill creeping charlie, because everyone has this question. What I would say is, you know, go do a nice search on the internet, and there's one that's popping into my mind is a borax treatment, and I don't remember exactly the rates in that thing, but take a look at that one. The other one, and I know this is a bit controversial, I might not make it out of the room here, but you could just live with it. It's a nice green cover. I've tried to convince my parents of that for many, many years and still hasn't worked. But
there is a borax treatment. The University of Iowa has that treatment. You have to be awfully careful when applying it. I tried it on just a little patch of my lawn just to see if it would work, and it worked. I mean, it just took everything.
Okay.
But I had another listener who tried it on her lawn, and she thought, well, if a little is good, maybe a whole lot more would be better. And she lost her entire lawn, grass and all. And you can get something called boron toxicity. I know you should not, I think the recommendations call for not applying more than once every 3 years, is it something? I mean, it's a long time in between applying, but if you, and it's also not, I'm not sure that the USDA has certified, or whoever the certifying agency is, is really a certified legal product to put on, but I put it on about 5 square feet and it killed all the creeping charlie. It was like magic, to be perfectly honest. So there you have it. Go online, and if you type in borax and creeping charlie, you're going to get all kinds of hits, and the University of Iowa one will probably come up first. Good luck. Thanks, Laura. Thank you very much for calling. Boy, lots of great questions here. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Having a lot of fun today broadcasting this edition of Garden Talk from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, kicking off the 6th annual Bayfield in Bloom celebration. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, Larry Mueller here, along with a very large audience. It's really great to see so many people here. Lots of great guests here as well that have provided some wonderful things to buy or to look at or to educate you about. We've got Core Community Resources here. We've got Good Earth Gardens here. Erickson Country Store, Bayfield Regional Conservancy is here. The DNR Urban Forestry folks are on hand. What Goes Round, Bayfield Books. Oh, my gosh. American Bloom, Ashland, Bayfield, Master Gardeners. That's one of my favorite groups of all times. I can tell you that right now. They're very good to me every year. Peterson Solar, Bert and Francie's Bakery and Coffee Shop. Have you ever had a chocolate lavender scone? We have them right here in the Bayfield Pavilion. And, oh, man, Eccles Pot Shop here with some great flower displays. So lots of wonderful people and really glad to have them all here. Lots of folks online. And we have some questions from the audience. So let's go there first. Your name.
Thanks for coming up, guys. We appreciate you coming here every year and sharing your insights. Speaking of Creeping Charlie, I loved your response. Live with it. It's great stuff. We have it and enjoy it very much on our yard. One invasive species that has been giving us fits over the years is the Japanese knotweed. And I'd love to have your thoughts with respect to trying to eradicate that. We've tried Roundup. We've tried cutting it. We've tried pulling it. It is one tough nut.
This is a question that I tried to answer last year, and I said you have to use dynamite, and that didn't go over very well. But since then, I can't say that I've really studied the results, but I'll call them a tag team, came up from the DNR two summers ago and treated a lot of it on some of our public land areas, and they used a product called Cornerstone, and I can't quantify this, but that evidently does some good, and you might try that.
Cornerstone. Okay. Thanks very much for that question. And let's see, Ray and Wasa. And by the way, our audience, if you have a question, just raise your hand, and Jim Packard will come around. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones and Ray in Wasa. Ray, hello. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I'm calling because I just thatched my grass. My back is breaking, but I'm gonna put down some seed and some fertilizer, and I've got some testing that's supposed to be done today and some lime. And my question is a simple one: do I put it all down at the same time, or am I supposed to fertilize in lime and then later the seed, or what's the order of things supposed to be?
Okay. Well, and you said you were going to do some testing. What kind of testing are you doing?
I sent off a soil sample at the local place, and they're supposed to tell me how much lime I need and something.
And you'll find that out today?
Hopefully.
Yeah, okay. All right. Jason, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I think definitely wait to get that those test results back, and that'll, again, tell you how much lime, if it's even necessary. Now, ideally, you'd like to incorporate that lime to some degree. So, you know, obviously you can't till in the whole lawn and start over, but you could rake it in pretty aggressively. That'll help if you do need to make a big change to your pH. Otherwise, I think you could apply the lime and the fertilizer all at the same time. You might want to let that sit for a few days, let it work in a bit, and then put the seed down. The concern is that the new seed roots might get burned off by that new fertilizer. So you want to try to let it work itself in and let the existing grass plants take it up a bit.
Do you water that in a little bit? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, water it in a little bit. And Jim Packard, we have another question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Candy from Bayfield, and I want to commend Art Odie for planting over 30,000 daffodils. And I found came across on the internet about daffodils, and I don't know if this is a good reason to have vodka in your garden, but I heard that if you put just like a half a shot of vodka on your bulbs, especially daffodils, in the fall when you plant them, that they'll come across pest-free and you'll get larger bulbs. And I wondered if you've ever heard this.
Half a shot of vodka. Drink half a shot, pour a half shot on your bulb.
Can the applicator consume it first?
Well, I'm pretty sure you didn't do it when you planted the 30,000.
The 30,000 daffodils, by the way, are a project of the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce, and I can only take a very little credit for that. It's the chamber has been behind this thing, and Carrie Obst is the chamber director, and she has as much of a daffodil dream as I do, so I'm going to share that with the chamber and with Carrie.
But what about the vodka?
No, I wouldn't share that. No, forget it.
I have another question. I have one more question, too. I think this is serious. A serious question, anyway. Do you know anything about midge? Have you heard about midge? On some of my fruit trees, especially my plum trees, my leaves get this hangy-downy, like, stuff on the leaves themselves, and now I've found it on my maple trees too, and I think that's what it's called, but I don't know.
Midges?
That's the fruit part of it is certainly for Jason.
Yeah, I believe what you're talking about are insect galls, and I don't know exactly which insects cause what kind of galls, but all it is, it's egg laying that's being done by the insects, and then as those eggs mature and the larvae mature, they cause the plant cells to grow in funny ways. And there's a whole range of galls that are out there.
Does it hurt my...
They typically will not harm the tree long term. It'll look kind of bad. And sometimes, for example, maple trees, if it gets a really heavy, you might see a kind of decrease in vigor for that year. But it's certainly nothing you're going to treat for. You know, it's something that's kind of neat to look at. And, you know.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for that question. Let's go to Sari in Westfield. Hi. Thank you for calling.
How are you guys today?
Great. What can we do for you?
Say, I heard you talking about sources for native plants, and I would highly recommend Prairie Nursery in Westfield.
Yeah,
they have wonderful native plants. They have a great website, prairienursery.com.
I like that idea. It's very good. There are a lot of pretty good native prairie nurseries around the state, and certainly Prairie Nursery is one of those, and I like your suggestion. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Susan in Krakow. Susan, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
I was going to say, I agree with the Creeping Charlie, and I have a lot of violets in my yard, and right now I have three different colors, and my yard looks great. But my question has to do with, and I do have a thing for the Japanese knotweed. My question has to do with, I have a Black Hill spruce, and I'm probably going to take it down because it's getting some kind of a sap thing running from where the branches come off the trunk. And then on the bottom part, it really started to lose its needles. And I have no clue what that is.
Okay, Don, you didn't know?
Potentially that could be a disease called Rhizosphera needle cast, or otherwise it's probably could be a... You say it's on the trunk?
The sap is mostly on the trunk. There's some on the branches, but where the branch comes out of the trunk is where you see a lot of the sap.
Okay, it's not a needle cast then. I don't know what that would be.
I would think that that's probably a canker, and if that's spread throughout the tree, I don't think there's much you can do about that. Unless it's some kind of a borer that is getting in right at the juncture of the branch in the trunk.
Is the sap a whitish color, a milky color?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah, I think it could be Cytospora potentially, Cytospora canker, which is something that is a slow progressive pathogen that will kill the tree. And what you want to do is, if you do take this tree down, you'll want to pick up the needles to get them off site. If you can, burn them or bury them or something like that.
Okay. I don't want my other spruces to get it. So is there anything else that I can help if they start showing any signs of it?
Getting airflow is good. Sunlight and lower limbs. You don't want limbs that are touching the ground, basically, because that keeps moisture, allows higher humidities, that kind of thing. So I would, if you have limbs that are touching the ground, I would remove those and allow more sunlight and airflow through there, because that'll help.
And if you take that tree down, plant a different species in that spot.
Yeah, and I think the idea about cleanup is also pretty key here. You want to get rid of those needles that are on the ground for sure.
I should jump in. There's, you know, especially when we start to see diseases in trees, and we're seeing a lot more of that up this part of the state because of the stress that trees have been under due to drought. And usually trees aren't going to die of disease unless they're stressed to start with, unless it's some other problem. So the thing to do is figure out what the stress is on that tree in the first place. And then once you can ameliorate that to some degree, if the disease is just starting to progress, and usually you'll see these flag branches, which one or two branches start to die, the needles start to brown, you can prune those back. That's kind of your first defense, and you hope conditions improve and the tree can fight it off, which it oftentimes can. And if that doesn't work and continues to progress, then the tree is probably a goner, and then I think everything that folks have said thus far is true. You certainly don't want to plant a Black Hill spruce in that same spot.
No. And thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. We're broadcasting today from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here with my three guests, Art Odie, Jason Fischbach, and Don Kissinger, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with a great audience in the Bayfield Pavilion, Bayfield, Wisconsin, as we celebrate the kickoff for Bayfield in Bloom. And having a lot of fun today talking with three guests. Art Odie, chair of the Bayfield in Bloom event. He's a horticultural landscaper and expert in many things relating to flowers and other plants as well. Jason Fischbach is the Ashland Bayfield County UW Extension Ag Agent. Don Kissinger is the West Central Regional Urban Forestry Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. And certainly we're inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. The number 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And we're going to let's start by taking a question from the audience. And your name?
Kathleen Russell from the Bayfield Washburn area.
Kathleen, thanks.
My question relates to the prevalence of clay soil along the shores of Lake Superior and where we have stream beds. When you have a ravine or a slope that is mainly clay soil, what do you recommend for planting for stability? Or are there things that we should avoid so that we're not putting in things that might be considered invasive species?
Let's turn to Jason first for that. Maybe all three of our guests might want to chime in, but let's see what Jason's got to say.
You're talking about planting trees and shrubs, or you're looking to do some sort of...
More having to do with stabilization, helping the effort to avoid erosion.
Yeah. You've got a couple of options, and you kind of want to think about it on a time scale. You need immediate stabilization. So they do, you know, annual seed mixes that tend not to spread. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of good seed sources for... the annual grasses up here in the northern tier of the state. Okay, where there are efforts underway to try to find that seed source. So you're stuck with things like annual ryegrass that go live for a year and then die. Then you're looking at trying to establish a tree and shrub layer, ideally of native species, and then you don't have the invasive concern. And then you're looking at things like willow and dogwood that root very easily. You can put stakes, live stakes, in the ground first thing in the spring, or sometimes even late in the fall. Those dense root system tend to hold the soil. And then you're looking to establish a tree layer as well. And you're looking at things like white pine, red pine, balsam fir, and some of the hardwoods. The problem you've got with all of that, of course, are deer, especially at some of the things like cedar and hemlock. But if the pines tend to be a little bit more resistant. If you're looking at specific projects, there is assistance through your county land conservation departments. They can come out and take a look at the site for you. The DNR also has some forestry staff that can take a look at the site and see what all needs to be done.
Yeah, Don Kissinger, you want to add something to that?
No, actually, Jason's covered very well.
So pretty good help there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your question. And we'll have some more questions from the audience, but let's while we're waiting for Jim Packer to get around with a microphone, let's go to Brian in Waterford. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question regarding a maple tree. I trimmed a branch off a maple tree in my backyard a year ago this past fall, and I noticed last summer that the scar was still oozing sap. And I thought, well, maybe it's just the just the normal follow-up still from just the pruning activity. Yeah. And I let it go for the summer, and I noticed this spring that it still is. And now over the winter, it seems like, or late in the fall or early this spring now, that the bark below that point is starting to split. And I don't know if it's if there's a fungicide or an insecticide or something that I should be trying to get this thing to seal up, or
let's see what Don has to say.
Well, actually, what I'm theorizing here is that when you made that pruning cut, you probably did it too flush or too close to the main limb or the trunk or whatever, because there's an area on the top of the branch which connects to the trunk, which is called the branch birch ridge, which actually is a ridge, and then below or underneath it, you'll see some concentric circles, which is where the branch collar is. So when you make the cut, you don't want it straight down, and you don't want to go through the collar or the branch bark ridge, because that creates a larger wound. And so when you cut the wound proper, or you make the cut properly at sort of a 30 or 45 degree angle, you should be getting a donut shaped callus. So tree branches never heal, but they callus. So being that it's calloused around kind of like a horseshoe, is that what it's looking like?
Yeah, more of a horseshoe, and it does have the start of that callus, but the middle seems to always still be damp and.
I'm not real concerned about that. You don't want to put anything on it. No. Using actually a paint or a sealer will actually inhibit it and slow down the callusing process and keep that from seeping. So I'm not real concerned with that. The one thing where it is cracked, I think that will continue to crack to a point in time until the callus does fully enclose in that area. And potentially you could have a weaker point in that limb because of that.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, there's nothing more you can really do to that.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And let's take another question from the audience.
Hi, Larry. This is Diana from Bayfield. And my question is that we've had drought conditions for several years. And have you heard any summer predictions for rainfall, especially in far northern Wisconsin, where it's been so dry?
I have my weather guys on the last Monday of every month, and I don't remember. I don't think we've talked about that. And so I personally don't know. You guys heard? Jason?
Well, I'm not going to, prognosticate what's going to happen this summer. I've heard different things and from different people, and nobody knows. What we do know this year going into the season is we're in much better shape than we were going into the season last year, because we had a lot of rain in the fall, and we've had quite a bit of rain and cool temperatures this spring. So the soil moisture is much, much better than it was same time last year. So that, that sets the stage, hopefully, for a better growing season for everybody. But you're right, we are going to need, of course, more rain.
Now we're going to need to be watering those trees on our lawns, too, if we've got dry conditions. The time to have been really watering was right up until freeze-up last fall, really giving the trees some good water to go into to the winter season. That really, really helps a lot. Reed in Clintonville is up next. Hi, Reed.
Oh, good afternoon, gents. Yes, the soil moisture is good. My wife just pulled up a dandelion root and all. Came up so easy. So anyway, my question is this. I have a maple tree. It's about a 5-inch trunk. It was planted about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And I have three branches that are just starting to grow like crazy right out of the top, maybe 6 feet long, tall. And I'm wondering, is it too late for me to cut them? I know that, it's usually during winter time.
Okay, and why do you want to cut these at this point in time?
Well, the tree has a beautiful shape, the crown and whatnot is well-shaped, but I've got these three big branches just starting to grow straight up out of the top.
So you're saying those three branches are competing to become the terminal leader? Yeah. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right now, have the buds open? Are they?
Yeah, it's leafed out. The tree has leafed out.
Okay. This is what I would do. I would wait until midsummer.
Mm-hmm.
You could prune it then. The best time would be to prune it in the fall after the leaves have dropped. What I would do is probably if you have three limbs that are competing right now, I would take the least of those and remove it in the fall. And the second best one, I would cut back to a lateral limb. What that's called is subordination. So what that'll do is it'll help the one that you didn't prune to become, you know, a better, stronger leader. So you've taken one out totally, and the other one that's remaining, you subordinate that. And then in probably 2 or 3 years, you might want to cut the second one fully back to the trunk. And then you're going to have a strong central leader.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you, Reed, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. I believe Greg in Eau Claire is up next. Greg, hello to you.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I wish I were in Bayfield.
Yeah, wish you were too. What's on your mind?
Well, our neighbors have had a number of red pines, and we had one linden, although I don't know if it's related. They develop a black ring right around the base, and then shortly after that, the tree just tips right over, breaks off flush with the ground. And we've got a number of white pines in our yard. I'm hoping that they're going to be safe.
All right, Don Kissinger?
When you say a black ring of on the trunk, it's black colored, or?
Yes, right there on the trunk, right by the ground. You know, if somebody had taken a little bit of black paint, for example, it would look like that.
I honestly do not have an answer for that. I don't know about that. I haven't seen that. Anyone else?
Harder.
Just a question. How big are the trees?
They're probably about 7-inch trunk.
Okay. Jason?
Yeah, my guess is you've got a fungal pathogen in the tree, and that's a fairly diagnostic symptom. I don't know exactly what the pathogen is, but it's pretty simple that with that information, if you got a hold of the plant disease diagnostic lab out of Madison, they should be able even to diagnose that over the phone. What's happening is it's probably a crown rot a fungus, and those symptoms show up right there at the base of the tree. And you've got the tree is probably ridden with the fungus at this point, and that's what's killing it. It can't move water, can't move nutrients. So, you may even be able to do the plant disease diagnostic lab out of Madison. If you Google that, you can find it.
University of Wisconsin Plant Diagnostic Laboratory. If you put that in your search engine, you'll come up with the contact there, or call your county extension office, and they'll give you the number too. They'll have the number for sure. Good luck, Greg. Thank you very much. We had an emailer who wonders, how do you treat shrubs and young trees that were girdled by voles last winter? And if they were truly girdled, Art?
Well, shrubs are hard to repair. And depending on what the shrubs are, if they're truly girdled, I think you have to take them pretty much down below the girdling and let them sprout back. If you've got a valuable tree, a valuable shade tree that was girdled, or valuable fruit trees, you can do bridge grafting, which is not terribly hard to do, but you need some detailed instructions. And you can either go to a good library book, or you can probably get some help online. It's more than I would take the time to try and explain, but a homeowner can do it. If you've got a valuable tree that's maybe, I'll just say, 4 inches in caliper or something, and it's been girdled by rodents, you can repair that if you have the patience to do it.
Oh, all right. And Jenny in Saukville is up next. Jenny, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time gardener for a while, and I was just wondering if there's anything that you guys can suggest as something that would be easy to plant and not overwhelming. I'm looking for, like, maybe tomatoes and cucumbers and stuff like that, but I was just curious.
Okay, vegetables. Okay. Well, Jason?
Yeah, I think, you know, tomatoes, potatoes, cucumbers, all those are very, very easy to grow, simple instructions. What I would encourage you to do, probably the best way to learn gardening, certainly you can read all you want, but is working with a mentor. And in fact, the Master Gardener program was designed to be just that in Wisconsin, and just about every part of the state has got a program. You can either join that program, that's a good way to learn, or you can just contact your county extension office, and they'll put you in touch with the Master Gardener Association. And they, you know, all those members are looking to fulfill their volunteer hour requirement, and they can come out and help you and answer any questions. Because it's, you know, you can read, but it's just not the same thing as talking to somebody with real life experience. But other than that, yeah, starting with kind of the most common vegetables. They're the most common vegetables for a reason, because they're easy to grow.
Yeah. Right? And the Master Gardeners are all wonderful people. You're going to really enjoy working with them. I'll get a little applause from that. Oh, you bet. Especially those Ashland Bayfield gardeners. thanks, Jenny, for calling. Linda in Oshkosh,
yeah.
Your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Oh, I had the question, okay. I look out at my yard, and I see nothing but little rings of chicken wire around everything I have. And the reason being is because we have rabbits and squirrels and all every animal you can think of is just chewing and just having lettuce out there like you wouldn't believe. And I just wondered if there was something that you could just do to the plants or spray or something that would just get rid of these things that are destroying everything.
Oh, boy. That is an age-old question. There's not, you know, short of fencing.
Yeah. I mean, the foolproof method, and even that's maybe not foolproof, is you put up an 8-foot fence, and the bottom of the fence is buried down at least a foot, and that's at least 1-inch mesh to try to keep rabbits, rabbits, raccoons, possums, and deer out, your main predators. These days, turkeys, I suppose, too. And there's everything else. The other trick is that there's no one trick. Everyone once in a while will be convinced that they've got the best deer repellent or the best whatever repellent. And they work for a little bit, and then the animals figure it out. So, you know, other than the fence, just keep trying all the different tricks that are out there and rotate them and change them from year to year so the critters don't get accustomed to them.
If you like pets, a dog.
Yep. Exactly, yeah.
A dog in the backyard can do a world of good. And we've had a lot of head nodding yes on that one, to keep the rabbits and the squirrels and the deer away. So unfortunately, if you want to get yourself a dog or two, that might be the best approach. Or Jason's idea of fencing is not a bad one. And actually, when you fence, you also need to go down, but then you need to sort of L it back, the bottom back under, so they can't dig underneath.
And then you keep the dog inside.
Then you keep the dog inside the fence. Yeah, even with the fence. Oh, my goodness. Thanks, Linda. Nick in Racine is up next. Let's go to Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Great.
Thanks for this program. I got
sure.
a question about Japanese beetles and a little leaf linden tree we have in our yard. We never had this infestation like we did last year, but boy, we just got the Japanese beetles and they were just all over that tree. And of course, the tree is fairly good size, so we couldn't do much about it. I mean, the tree's got to be 15, 20 feet tall. And now this year I see that, you know, it's leafing out, looks pretty good. There's a lot of small dead branches in it that I might want to cut out. But what about the control of these things, I guess, in the grub stage?
Well,
I do have a suggestion. Move yourself and your tree to Bayfield. We don't have Japanese beetles.
No Japanese beetles in Bayfield.
Yeah. Too tough.
Aside from that, Jason.
Yeah, I'd have to check. We don't have Japanese beetles up here, so I don't work with them very much. But there, I know it's an issue that's been a great consternation across the southern part of the state. What I would do is, you know, contact your University of Wisconsin folks at your extension office and find out exactly what they're doing for you and your county. There are a range of control options, and my understanding is not all of them are very effective, just because Japanese beetles, much like all these invasive species, are a real pain.
And if you live near a golf course in southern Wisconsin or an open grass area, there's almost nothing. I mean, they'll come in from a long ways off.
Yeah, right.
And so you might be able to kill the ones that are in your lawn, but tomorrow there's a whole new batch to come in. So it is very difficult in southern Wisconsin.
It is okay for me to trim out those dead branches out of the linden now, isn't it? Or should I just forget it?
Yeah, any time of the year taking dead branches out is fine if they're truly dead.
Yep. Thanks again for calling. I wish we could be a little more positive in our response on that one. Marilyn in Eau Claire has a question or comment. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
I'm calling about my cherry tree. It died and we removed it, but now the next one in line is kind of having problems. I can explain a little bit about what happened. In the fall, it fruited very well, and then there were in every few fruits had a little white worm in it. Which I think that's some kind of a fruit fly, isn't it? A cherry fly or something. But then this spring, it's definitely dead. It looked like it was going to die toward later in the season last year. Now it's definitely dead. The bark peeled back in spots, and there are little worm tracks in the bark, and there are little tiny holes, like 16ths of an inch wide holes that are bored in through a couple of spots. So I wonder if there are two things going on or if that's one critter.
Yeah, you've got two different critters. You're right about the maggots in your cherries. It's a cherry fruit fly, and that's not going to kill your tree. That just damages the fruit. Exactly what it sounds like you've got a borer of some sort that's getting into the tree. It chews through the cambium, and that ends up girdling the tree. Exactly what that is, you know, I'd have to take a look at the actual insect or the damage to see exactly what that is. Both of them can be treated with insecticides, and you'd have to consult a list to find out exactly what would be approved for the cherries.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And maybe we have time for one quick question.
Bayfield, and we've discussed this in our Master Gardeners class. I'm just curious, what can we do for deer? And my cat saw our first bear heading through the woods yesterday. What can we do what kind of plants can we grow that are deer resistant?
There's a whole list. That's another thing that you have to do some personal research on. There, you can start with, I hate to say daffodils again, but I mean, daffodils are one of the few things that really the deer don't bother. But you just have to do some research on that, because there's a whole host of things that are somewhat less tasteful to deer, and then there's a list of things that are a little less palatable than that. And so, but if deer are hungry,
they'll eat anything.
They'll eat anything.
They will eat anything. And I'll eat anything too, almost sometimes. I get hungry enough, and I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure to have the great audience that we've had today and to have our three guests with us here as we broadcast from Bayfield. Art Odie, chair of the Bayfield and Bloom event, Jason Fishbach, Ashland Bayfield County UW Extension Ag Agent, and Don Kissinger, West Central Regional Urban Forestry Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. Really a pleasure to have them. Thanks to everybody. I wanted to thank Joe Hartke as well, one of our other engineers I forgot to mention earlier, and a great goodbye and good luck to Steve Williams, who took your phone calls today. And thank you all for listening. It's been a real joy for us to be here from Bayfield. Get up to Bayfield and the area. This northern part of Wisconsin is absolutely lovely. You're going to love it here. You're going to have a great time when you get here. Larry Mueller here. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.